Welcome to the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I'm Trevor, and with me I have Meg, and I have Josh.
Hello.
Hi.
Today's movie, we are going to be reviewing Big Trouble in Little China. Yeah. This is a out of the blue, Josh's call. He wanted to watch this movie, and
the stars aligned. So
he just wanted to see some stars. He wanted to see Kurt Russell in a tank top
and a kimono. A silk, nice little blue kimono.
And he was wearing the same suit from Used Cars.
That's right.
Yes.
Filmed here in Arizona.
Oh, very cool. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yes, it's filmed here.
Nice.
That's the big movie we're known for.
Okay. I'd like to know where so I can go just stand there and be like, Kurt Russell was around here somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll find out for you.
Sweet. Yeah. I'll Google it afterwards.
No, I want to get you in that. I want to get that information for you.
It is The Big Trouble in Little China. It is written by Gary Goldman and David Z. Weinstein. However, it was then adapted by W.D. Richter. It went through extensive rewrite from what mm-hmm. I understand.
Yeah, they wanted to make it a Western, apparently, in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, the two guys, they wrote it as a Western. And it was supposed to be set at the turn of the century.
Yes.
The last century, not this one.
Yes, the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's the one.
The actors are Kurt Russell, Kim Cattrall, Denny Doon, probably pronouncing that wrong, James Hong, and Victor Wong. The release date was July 2nd, 1986. And the runtime is 99 minutes. Josh, what was the reason for the stars aligning?
We had just had Death Proof, and you know, it was a Kurt Russell movie. Also, something about green eyes just made me think of it.
He wanted more Kurt Russell.
It's James Hong, right? Hong or James Hong?
James Hong, yeah. It might have been like a short or something like that where he was talking about girls with green eyes. I was like, we got to do this.
He was great in Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like he was in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a great job. He's still out there acting up a storm for his age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't quit.
Yeah, this movie it was really cool watching this movie again. His one-liners are spectacular. Jack Burton just wants everybody to know that he speaks of himself in third person quite often.
Yeah.
Is so just great. I don't know if I could ask for anything more from Kurt Russell in the role that he played. He was a quintessential. Like, I don't know what's going on here. I'm the second white person in this whole group of Chinese people who's like, tell me what the fuck is going on here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm seeing shit I'm not believing.
See, that's the thing. It was written like, or I should say kind of the way they turned it was for, he just like, no, he's not going to be the main guy. You know, even the beginning, they make it look like he is.
Yes.
But then he's just a moron through the whole thing. You know what I mean? Like, doesn't understand what's going on through the whole film. The fighting abilities are like next to nothing except for like, you know, two lucky things. Three. He has three lucky moments in the entire movie, and they're actually like in the first act, second act, and third act.
Sure.
He kind of gets those moments. So it's interesting. Like, it's just such a cult movie that. So this came out the same year as a bunch of good movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Alien came out. Aliens.
It would have been Aliens. The second one.
Yeah,
yes.
Aliens.
Yes.
And that was like the super action movie it was like, you know, like
Top Gun came out.
Top Gun was the biggest grossing movie of that year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a lot of combat, like a lot of other movies to combat against. And this one did not make it. But it apparently, because Fox had put themselves into like so many other things that they didn't really focus on advertising this.
Well,
they didn't know how either.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because it comes across as, you know, in the 80s, who gave a fuck? You know what I mean? Like, they could say whatever they wanted, you know, and no one would be like, oh, you can't advertise that way. Nowadays, it's like, It's like P's and Q's. They're like someone over your shoulder just watching everything you do.
Well, and Kurt Russell wasn't a huge star back then.
No, he had big movies, but he was...
We all knew, like, I knew who he was because I thought he was so handsome. And I was a little girl, but I still thought he was handsome.
Overboard?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like he was known.
He was known. He was Overboard was a couple of years. Yeah, that was a few years later, and it seems like a lot of years, but it was really only just a few years later. Yeah. But
so he did like Snake in the early '80s. He had a bunch of stuff, but there was a kind of a fall off. But Carpenter was in love with him.
Yeah,
he's like, sure, I'm going to throw other names in this hat. It was like Clint Eastwood, like big names.
It was Jeff Bridges because remember Carpenter did Starman
with him. Yeah.
So I think he kind of wanted him to, but he really, really liked Kurt Russell. Yeah. He liked working with Kurt Russell, and he knew that Kurt Russell didn't have a big ego. And I think that was the biggest thing because this guy had to understand that he wasn't the main guy, you know? Yeah. This is really like Dennis Dunn's kind of, he was the action guy in this.
Exactly.
And Kurt Russell was just kind of like, he was technically the sidekick, but he was a hot sidekick.
The story in the world pushes everything really. He's just kind of there and he's just like, he's your American connection to it.
Yes.
As far as like, I mean, like this is Cold War time. So it's like, you know, like, look, we're America. We are big and great.
Yeah.
We talk about the Pork Chop Express all day long. And just fucking nonsense. No one answers him either.
When we drive, too.
No one answers him ever. He's just sitting there going like, yeah, fucking the check is in the mail.
Says, what the hell?
They're great one-liners. They are. Yes. They're amazing. Yeah. Yes. But it's just, but they're also nonsensical.
Yes.
Like, it's just it's crazy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It made it the movie. It's what, to me, is why this movie still gets the following has the following that it does.
Yeah.
Because it's
unique.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they always talk about like doing a sequel or a remake. Don't do a remake. If you want to do anything, do a fun sequel, but just a new story. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Carpenter doesn't do sequels. He lets other people do sequels, he doesn't do sequels. The only time he did was pretty much Escape from LA.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the only one I can think of that he did.
Yes.
On his own.
That's because he wanted LA to be a shithole. And he's like, let's do earthquakes here and fuck this place up. And I'll write a story.
I'll bet you it was to work with Kurt Russell.
And we'll get some really badass surfboards.
He just loved working with that Kurt Russell.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
When you work with somebody, you're like, damn, I can work with this guy. He gets me. He understands. Like, it's not hard. You want to come do another one?
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw Escape from New York. I didn't see it at the theaters, but I saw it when I was a little kid. So I always loved Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Like he was just so good looking, you know. I loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know that he wasn't a huge star. You know, when you're a little kid, you have no idea that this guy's not a huge star.
Sure.
He's in a lot of movies.
He's in movies. He's fucking huge. Yeah. He's more famous than I am.
He's in the movies I watch.
Yeah.
So I think that he's a big star.
Yeah.
Because he's doing stuff that I'm watching. So he must be huge.
Yep.
Not to mention, he was on an episode of Gilligan's Island, too. So I saw him on that and I was like, that's Kurt Russell. Like, he's a little boy. His name was Boy.
Well, it's like one of my favorite movies when I was growing up was Krull. And it's a terrible fucking movie, but it's still good in that way. The main guy, you're like, oh, he's got to be in a bunch of stuff. No, he's not. The only guy that was any good in there.
The Neesons.
And that was that movie that had that
spinning
five-bladed
with a weapon star. Fucking $40 million diamond on top.
That was that. He was like a B-level, maybe a D-level actor where he just did. He worked, though. He just made movies like.
I think he was more of a theatrical actor, and then the people that made the movie, like, they kind of went with him because, like, he'll really bring the presence of the character out, kind of deal, you know?
Oh, no.
When everybody was just terrible in that. There was, like, two guys that were noteworthy, and everything else was like, okay, what the fuck?
Yes.
Yeah. And I still love that movie just because that spinning fucking sword thingy.
It's great. It's a great fantasy story. Yeah. Like it hits all the tropes. Of a fantasy story.
No, I think the sale of it was like it's Star Wars meets fantasy. Yeah. Like Star Wars is already fantasy, but whatever, you know.
Yes, it's science fiction or science fantasy.
I was a Beastmaster girl, so I didn't get into that whole Krull thing. Yeah.
If it wasn't for Krull, I wouldn't have found Beastmaster.
See, I
like,
was
those are to me, those are great yeah. things to me.
Yeah, he had Mark Singer and Beastmaster. Just running around in a loincloth with yes. Tanya Roberts. I never found
mongooses and
I never and, found Mark Singer very attractive. I like his his sister Lori no, from Footloose. I love her, but I never found him super attractive.
He had a tiger, an eagle, and two weasels.
Yes.
Mongoose.
They were mongoose.
Weren't they?
I thought they were weasels.
They were ferrets. They were
little like little ferrets, yeah.
Ferrets, sorry, yes.
Yeah, ferrets.
Mongoose is more fucking. These were like, they're going to steal your shit all the time. And like, fuck, they stole my shit again.
Tanya Roberts' boobs. You always got, back then, you always got Tanya Roberts' boobs. You got Sheena, you got Tanya Roberts' boobs.
Yeah.
No matter what, you were always guaranteed until she did Charlie's Angels, and then that was television, and boobs couldn't, went away.
Yep,
no more boobs.
See him.
No couldn't more boobs.
See him. Catastrophe. You guys want to get right into this review?
All right, let's do it.
All right.
Yeah.
The movie begins with a lawyer, played by Jerry Hardin, questioning his soon-to-be client, Egg Shen, who is played by Victor Wong. The lawyer asks about a one Jack Burton and his truck, to which Egg Shen reacts very passionately. Egg Shen gets his point across to the lawyer that he doesn't want to talk about Jack Burton or his truck.
Is that the X-Files guy?
It was Mulder's dad. That is Mulder's dad.
I was going to say, yeah. Because that whole scenario seemed X-Files-y to me.
Oh, was it the cigarette-smoking man?
No, it wasn't the cigarette-smoking man.
It was... You know, I saw that scene, but I was also on my computer at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I heard the scene, but I didn't really look at the scene.
If he's not Mulder's dad, then he's... I don't know who he is, but he was in X-Files. Mm. He was.
Yeah.
Not continuously, but he had a good role there.
Because there was even a line.
My computer cell phone.
Okay. All right.
So there was literally a line in there about not trusting the government, too. I don't know if you caught it, but there was something about that.
Probably.
I was just like, I don't know. Sure. I feel like this made the X-Files, because that was like... Was that late 80s or just early 90s?
X-Files
started
early
in the early
90s.
Early 90s, so 5 years later, 6 years later. Okay.
Yeah. I did like the whole light, dark contrasting on Egg Shen's face to make him look all mysterious.
Yeah.
And like, it was all right, weird choice to start out with. The lawyer concedes his line of questioning about Jack Burton. The lawyer then moves on to his next question. He asks Egg Shen how he can believe in magic. Egg Shen specifies Chinese black magic. Well, what about monsters and ghosts? Oh, sure, and sorcery too, Wong replies that he believes in. Lastly, the lawyer asks how he is supposed to believe in sorcery. So Egg Shen raises his hands into the camera frame, and electricity spans the space between his upheld hands. And then you get some credits, and then it cuts to a tractor trailer, which is the proper term for a big rig, semi truck, whatever you want to call it. It's hauling ass down a wet road towards Chinatown, San Francisco. Jack Burton, played by Kurt Russell, and the Pork Chop Express speak to no one in particular over his shortwave radio.
Just eating that sandwich.
Yes.
Just fucking drip.
One hand. That is a huge
he's
fucking sandwich.
He's got a handful of sandwich and the other hand's on the radio.
Yes.
Probably stirring with that big old dong.
People
always eat sandwiches in ways that I would never eat a sandwich. Like there's no way you can't, that would get all over you.
I can't eat. I don't do that when I drive. No. I can't. That just seems, I'll retract that. I will eat like these crunchy little breakfast bar things. That's easy.
You can eat like easy stuff.
Like a sandwich or something where I gotta sloppy, like get a good hand on it and then get like work my mouth around it somehow.
That can't sounded do that. Interesting. I'll eat car snacks. Things that are little things I can pop into my mouth. But I'm not gonna do anything like large. Although I have been known to stop at like a Burger King and get a Whopper when I'm driving. I don't know why. I don't do this very often. I'm just like maybe I haven't eaten. I'm starving, and I see a Burger King.
Well, do you eat while you drive?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just that, just a Whopper. I've only ever eaten a Whopper while I've driven, as far as like food goes.
Well, that's what you and Jack Burton have in common.
Yeah.
You eat sandwiches.
I've done it twice. Yeah.
You eat meat between two buns. Mm-hmm.
French fries yeah. are easy to eat. Yes. It's kind of like
I don't like people doing that in the car while they're driving. Why not? It lets air into the French fries. They get cold really fast. And no, by the time I get them,
eat all the French fries before I get home.
No.
I don't know what kind of game you're playing.
Jack crosses the Golden Gate Bridge as he pulls into a terribly busy and rainy Chinatown alley. Jack makes his delivery, grabs some more food, and then finds his way to a gambling table. His friend Wang, played by Dennis Dune, is also at the table gambling. After losing to Jack over the night, Wang wants to win his money back from Jack. Wang bets Jack that he can cut a glass bottle in half.
He says nothing or double.
Yes, I think that's on purpose.
Very opposite.
Yeah. Wang loses the bet, causing the bottle to careen towards Jack's head. If it wasn't for the cat-like reflexes of Jack, the bottle would have smacked him right in the kisser. Before Wang can pay Jack his winnings, Wang has to go to the airport. On the way to the airport, Wang tells Jack all about Miao Yan. I did Google how to say meow.
Yeah.
They say it a bunch in the movie. I don't know why I had to Google it.
Because I wanted to make sure that it was right. At the airport, Jack spots Gracie Law, played by Kim Cattrall, and she's waiting for somebody. Miao Yan picks up her luggage, a box presumably filled with all of her belongings.
So ridiculous.
Yes.
It just has Chinese writing all over it. It's like, oh, this is my Chinese bag. Look, isn't it beautiful?
It's tied with string.
Cardboard box. Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Jack flirts with Gracie as three gang members push through them. Jack makes to go after them, but Gracie explains that those guys are the Lords of Death, a Chinese street gang from Chinatown. Gracie is visibly worried about their presence. Gracie spots her friend Tara as she exits the customs line. At the same time, the Lords of Death members do as well.
Tara is from Gleaming the Cube.
I don't even know that.
Christian Slater on a skateboard.
I don't think I've seen that one. No, I've only seen Jared Leto in Rollerblades.
Okay, no, Gleaming the Cube. All the stunts are Tony Hawk, and Ooh. Yeah, it's a wonderful. It also has an Asian element going on.
Okay,
some gang stuff going on in that. There's a little bit of fighting. And good follow-up to this. Watch it later.
Even Zatoichi would know.
Wang sees Miao Yan as well. The members make for Tara, but Jack intervenes. Wang looks for Miao during the fracas. Jack is retreating from a knife and baton-wielding member when another member leg sweeps Jack from behind, causing Jack to fall backwards. Gracie and Tara have run off, so the members grab Miao instead. Wang and Jack chase after the members. Gracie and her friend hide from the gang members in the parking garage. She sees Jack and Wang running after members and Meow.
Meow was the penthouse playmate of the year 1981.
Yeah.
Oh, was she?
Yes.
Very cool.
No, I recognized her.
I thought so. You went back to your collection and you looked up your childhood.
Yeah.
1981, the year when you were one year. Of age.
My father got them for me. He loved me.
Yeah, it sounds like a very caring father.
Your first birthday.
Gracie gives Jack directions, and he tells her to call the cops. Gracie ignores Jack and leaves in an orange van. A red sports car driven by the gang members attempt to run over Jack and Wang. Jack saves both of them from a grisly death.
This is the worst. They're just standing there fucking... They should have just split.
Yeah, sure.
There was more of a chance of somebody getting hurt if you're pushing the guy out of the way that way, you know what I mean, than just going the opposite direction.
You probably should have been the stunt coordinator on this film.
I am the stunt coordinator of stunts.
Okay. I would like to see some.
I coordinate them. I don't do them.
Okay. All right.
The name.
I'll get a couple people together and we'll see what happens. Okay, get you to coordinate them to do stuff.
He just draws stick figures. That's all he does.
Cut to the truck speeding down the highway. Jack wants answers about what just happened, but Wang doesn't have any answers for Jack. Wang now reveals that Gracie is a lawyer. Wang and Jack head for the Lords of Death clubhouse. The movie cuts to Egg Shen talking to a group of tourists on his tour bus. Egg turns left on a street when he sees the Pork Chop Express headed straight for him. The pair of vehicles swerve to avoid colliding with one another. Jack and Wang pull into a narrow alley where the Lords of Death clubhouse is suspected to be found. And on their way, they pass an elderly Chinese man. Jack and Wang have interrupted a funeral procession of the Chang Sing, a fighting Tong. briefly, a tong is a meeting hall or a hall or a meeting place where Chinese men and women would meet, and it is associated with the gangs, the Chinese gangs. From behind the Pork Chop Express, another tong, the Wing Kong, emerges suddenly from the fog. The Wing Kongs have an assortment of displayed weapons, blades, and guns meant to intimidate the Chang Sing.
And you have the most classic of, like just henchmen.
Yes.
Like, he's literally the henchman.
Yeah.
The guy with the long hair. Yep. He's kind of balding.
Yeah.
But he's good, man. He's a good martial artist.
He's in everything. Yeah. He's in everything that ever came out.
Well, he's the one that electrocuted Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. Yep.
Al Leon.
That's the one.
So a gun battle happens in the narrow alley of Chinatown. After the gunfire has subsided, a melee battle now ensues between the warring tongs. Suddenly, a bright green flash sends all the combatants running in the opposite direction, and from the flash materializes the three storms. First, it is Thunder, played by Carter Wong. Big old thick boy. Followed by Rain, Peter Kwong, fucking Beanpole Man. And then coming in last is Lightning, a mix between the two, played by James Pax. The three withstand a barrage of bullets. Then each with their own unique weapon dodge the tractor trailer or the tractor truck as Jack attempts to drive over them.
You know the funny part? Those weapons are so tiny. Yes. He's got like the little spinny things on his hands. And the other one pulls him out and there's these tiny little claws. Yeah. He's like, scratch, scratch, scratch. And then what did the other guy have?
I don't remember. Oh. It might have been just a sword. Like, I don't recall.
Yeah, they all had tiny weapons. That was hilarious.
Apparating out of nowhere is a tall Chinese man with long black hair and a long black mustache named Lo Pan, who is played by James Hong. Jack runs over Lo Pan with his tractor truck. However, Lo Pan seems unfazed. And instead, he emits a bright light from his eyes and mouth, blinding Jack. Wang saves Jack from further blindness by leading him away from Lo Pan. And then splashing
gross
water in his face.
Fucking rainwater in his face. Yeah, that helps. That helps.
Yeah.
Got myrrh.
The ancient Chinese ritual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't worry about all the urine that's in this water.
You get MRSA, but you can see for now.
Yeah. Wang and Jack find a place to hide with a Chang Sing member. Wang explains the Lords of Death are errand boys for Wing Kong. Before Wang can explain any more about who Lo Pan is, the Wing Kong have found their hiding place. Wang and Jack escape through a short tunnel. Jack ditches his pullover, leaving him with tank top, jeans, and knee-high brown boots. Those are pretty fucking sweet boots. Like, I saw those boots, I was like, I want those boots. Wang and Jack are at the restaurant, Dragon of the Black Pool, which is the restaurant that Uncle Chu, who is Wang's uncle, owns, and that's where Wang works at. Jack wears a blue silk kimono while attempting to get the phone number for his insurance provider. Uncle Chu is worried about the appearance of Lo Pan. And we meet the new maitre d', Eddie Lee, who is played by Donald Lee. And he breaks the unwelcome news to Jack that his truck was stolen by the Lords of Death. Eddie is explaining about the airport mix-up and the 411 on the street, on the Tong street fight, when none other than Gracie Law turns up at the Black Dragon. Gracie knows where Miao Yan is being held. Uncle Chu tells the group that Lo Pan is immortal. Wang needs Jack's help to rescue Miao. She was just there to further the plot. Yeah. In that scene. It was a weird reason for her to be there in the first place.
So apparently the whole time they were filming this, she was doing, she would leave at like 6 and go do like theater. Movie, like theater stuff.
Intriguing.
Yeah. She was doing this so that she didn't have to waitress. She didn't really care about movies. She wanted to be a theater actress.
And that's the thing. So if you like the way she performs this, though, is very like what is it? It's like Great Gatsby, kind of like, you know, the like, oh, I've got a new star for you there, kid.
They did that on purpose. They both talk to each other in that way. That's supposed to be kind of like that weird, quick quipping, you know, like, what are you doing? Like, da-da-da-da. Like, really fast.
But she always held that air about her the entire time. It was always a thing, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of has that, like, 1930s, 1920s.
Exactly, yeah.
Like Ms. Marvel. I think they did it on purpose.
Yeah, well,
Do you notice that, like, the friend who's the reporter... her last, her real last name, she's Richard Burton's daughter in real life. So her last name is Burton, and Kurt Russell's character's name is Burton.
So
I wonder if it wasn't like, hey, you know, we've got Richard Burton's daughter. Let's give him that, that name. Who knows? You know, like, or was it because, you know, he had this weird thing about, like, a lot of his movies, he works with the children of famous older people. Have you ever noticed that?
No, I really haven't noticed that. No, I have not.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Sure.
He's worked with, what's her name? Melanie Griffith.
Okay.
And their mothers are Hitchcock actresses. You know, they're old school. So it's like that kind of that weird thing where he works with these like children of, like daughters, it seems like, daughters of big stars from the past.
Yeah. David Keith twice. I don't know if he has anybody in the family, but
no.
I love David Keith though. So
I also used to love David Keith.
Used to? What happened with him?
I don't know. He got old.
Oh.
He's not super hot anymore.
He still got that voice though.
Are you talking about Keith David?
That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
David Keith is a white man.
Well.
Oh, I'm talking about the black man.
David Keith is the dad from Firestarter. Which John Carpenter was supposed to direct, but they pulled him because his movie flopped. So that's why he didn't get to direct Firestarter.
It looks like he's always looking into a fire because his eyes are always kind of small. There's a fiery glare. No, Keith David. Mm-hmm. Yes, I like him. He was in Something About Mary. How'd you get the beans with the Franks? Anyways.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one. At the White Tiger, Wayne, Gracie, and Eddie wait outside in the car as Jack, in business schmuck attire, begins a rescue mission.
Use cars.
Gracie spots the car of her friend and reporter, Margot, played by Kate Burton. She leaves the men for Margot. Inside the brothel, Jack is working his ruse. He requests a girl with green eyes, and the madame tells him there is no such thing as a Chinese girl with green eyes. The host overhears Jack and retreats towards a secret room in the brothel where Miao Yen is currently imprisoned. An earthquake shakes the brothel as a bright green flash pulses above the building. Simultaneously, the roof and ceiling are torn off of the building in two places. One is the small room where Miao is tied to a bed frame. The second is the hall where Jack was with a sex worker. Thunder and rain confront Jack in the hall.
This is the 80s, you can call them what they are. She was a hooker.
Okay. Lightning collects Meow from the small room. Jack gets in a couple of punches on Rain. And in return, Rain kicks Jack back in towards the room. The three storms leap with their prize in hand.
So apparently Lightning, that was the when they made Raiden in Mortal Kombat.
Ooh.
That's where the idea came from.
Very cool.
Exactly where it came from. He had the same hat. He has the same powers. You know, he's not stealing, you know, children and ladies with green eyes. But that's the thing. You watch this movie, what other dastardly stuff do you think they did, you know, outside of, you know, stealing women and, you know, what other like nefarious things were they into?
Yeah.
You know?
That's one to ponder.
Yeah. A little bit of laundering money, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, gambling, definitely gambling.
Definitely some gambling.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Some pie-gow tables going on.
Sure. What crime organization does not have their fingers in gambling?
Jewish mafia.
I doubt that.
If there is such a thing.
I believe there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't
every race, like everybody seems to have a criminal organization. Probably even Sweden.
You got those Amish Norway. Gangsters.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
They're everywhere.
Is that what that one song was about? Amish Paradise?
Yeah, for sure.
That's
dude.
Exactly what it was about.
Yeah. Right. Weird Al wasn't like making a parody. Like he was trying to open up our eyes.
Yeah, he infiltrated the group. He lived with them for probably a year while he was working on that song.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably at least a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's how much time you usually want to put into writing a good song.
Oh, yeah. Otherwise, you're just not putting out good music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or really understanding the plot of your story, you know, like you need to understand the characters and everybody that you're writing about.
Mm-hmm.
It's important.
Gracie, Margot, Eddie, Wang, and Jack end up at Gracie's office. Wang deduces that Lopan has Meow. Jack can't accept what he's seen and he needs to know what the hell is going on. Like, none of this shit's right. Wang admits that nobody knows what's going on, and Wang is losing his patience, so he goes to the Wing Kong Exchange.
Can't have an impatient Wang.
Nope.
You gotta be patient.
Oh, yeah.
You gotta take your time.
Yep.
You gotta take your time to do it right.
That's right. And this is where the Tong where Lo Pan can be found, the Wing Kong Exchange. Gracie explains to them that it's too dangerous, but Wang don't give no fucks. He'll be in and out like the wind. A plan is devised, and Jack and Wang are going to go to the Wing Kong Exchange. Gracie says, I'd go with you, but Jack and Reps, I know there is a problem with your face.
That's the best.
I know, I loved it. That's why I put it in there.
I loved it, yeah.
Cut to Jack and Wang entering the Wing Kong Trading Exchange. The men start improvising about being telephone repair technicians. Jack just holds a phone as Wang translates as Jack shouts.
That's Chinese Connection.
No, I don't even know what that is.
So that's a Bruce Lee movie where he infiltrates this other like group, and that he says he's a telephone repairman. Uh-huh. And he literally just goes in there and like hangs it up 7 times and picks it up. It's so terrible. But that's how he infiltrates the building, yeah.
Okay, all right. The pair, now that they're past the guards, start exploring the Tong. Still improvising on their way around. We cut to Egg Shen giving a reading to Uncle Chu at the Black Dragon. Eddie explains to Gracie that Egg is a font of knowledge when it comes to Lo Pan. Egg explains that they must gather their forces, but out of chaos comes order. Cut to Wang and Jack in a dusty basement room of the Wing Kong Exchange, where they find a trail in the dust leading to a false wall. The two investigate the elevator that leads underground. Back at the Black Dragon, Egg and Chu explain to Gracie that Lo Pan is a demon, a creature of vast, dark, destructive power. Back with Wang and Jack, the elevator begins to fill with water. When the two are fully submerged, the doors open to reveal multiple victims in the death room. Swimming to the top of the room, one of the three storms meets them there. Jack and Wang are being beaten and tortured. They are taken by wheelchair to meet Lo Pan, who is also in a wheelchair, and now appears as a feeble old man with white hair and a long white mustache.
They did a lot of work on James Hong in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, it was either like, you're a 7-foot-tall man, like, with powder, makeup on.
Oh, yeah.
Or you're going to be an old, liver-spotted.
Real wrinkly. Like, the most wrinkles that could be wrinkled on that fucking, at that time and
it's like technology. It's like a Shar-Pei.
Yeah.
It mixed with like one of those hairless cats.
Yeah, like the hair was so wispy and thin. It was
uncomfortable.
Gross.
It was uncomfortable. Like, yeah. They did a good job. A lot of the makeup and stuff. They did. The practicals in this movie insanely good.
Yeah,
especially the spectator.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I didn't even think to call it that. Lo Pan does the villain plan reveal. He needs a girl with dragon green eyes to satisfy his demon god. Oh, I'm gonna fuck this up. Ching Ti. I might be saying that wrong. I'm probably saying that wrong. When his god is happy, then the ancient curse will be lifted and Lo Pan can rule the universe. Lo Pan spots Eddie, Gracie, and Margo at the front desk of Wing Kong Exchange. Gracie threatens the guard with Margo's occupation, but the guard doesn't bite. Thunder tells the group that he can help them. Wang and Jack, now blindfolded, are being pushed up a stone ramp towards a room by some Wing Kong members. The pair are left alone. Jack rocks his chair side to side in order to reach his trusting boot knife. Thunder escorts Gracie, Margo, and Eddie nowhere. Instead, the three are gassed, but Thunder remains unaffected. Wang and Jack try to figure a way out of their locked room, and Wang explains that the first sovereign emperor of China defeated Lo Pan and cursed him with disembodiment for eternity. Thunder arrives with an unconscious Eddie. When Thunder's back is turned, Jack grabs him, but Thunder counters. He throws Jack into a wall. Wang tries to fight Thunder, but does not succeed. Jack gets a better hold on Thunder. Wang is able to escape with Eddie, and they encourage Jack to follow when Thunder starts to expand his body. This causes Jack to be thrown into one of the wheelchairs, and the wheelchair and Jack now start to roll down the ramp uncontrollably. Jack takes out a couple of armed Wing Kong members. The wheelchair comes to a halt when it slams into the rim of a well. Jack definitely maneuvers using his biceps.
He does one of the most legendary fucking like crunches of all time.
Yep. He goes from near 180 degree to like 90 degrees using just his biceps, fighting against that gravity.
There was some core in there. There was some core in there. Sure,
both. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There was rippling. I saw rippling.
I wonder when he has time to do yoga.
So apparently when he trained for this, he ran every day and did weight training. So
I believe it.
For 2 months, he kind of like set himself up for this.
Yeah, sure. You can tell. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Like those were worked for biceps that he had.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, didn't go shirtless, you know, because yeah.
He probably had a beer belly. Yeah, like, he had the open sides though. A
little side pack.
I wouldn't say a beer belly, no, but he had some there. Where he's like, yeah, but I still drink beer.
Yeah, he's super fit in this movie. He looks great. He's
is
all
what
oiled
I believe.
Up. Yeah,
he had some side pecs.
Yeah, side pecs.
They're like just peeking out of the side of his.
Yeah, he was glistening. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know why he was glistening the entire time?
Because he was sick.
He was sick. He had the flu.
He had the flu.
They didn't spray him. He literally was just sweating the whole time from sickness.
Don't worry about it, guys. I got it. I create my own water right now.
Wherever I go, I glisten.
Eddie, Wang, and Jack pick up the dropped weapons, the dropped firearms of the Wing Kong men. We cut to Lopan on the phone with the minion declaring that he wants Eddie, Wang, and Jack dead. Lopan transforms into his disembodied form so he can pass through the walls of his complex to admire Miao Yan. Yep. And he's doing this whole disembodied, like, reaching, like, pretending that he's holding her and grabbing her. It's very creepy.
Yeah.
And it was effective. We cut back to Eddie, Wang, and Jack as they make their way towards the women. The three of them take out some Wing Kong members they encounter along the way. Wang and Eddie cause a distraction so that way Jack can sneak around to release Grace, Margot, and all the rest of the trapped women. Panic ensues when Jack fires some rounds to aid in the escape. Eddie and Wang make it through the exit, closing the door to cover their escape as bullets ricochet off the metal door. The only way out is through a moon pool that leads to a sewer. Jack leads the group back to the same dusty basement. When Jack opens the door to leave, the members of the Wing Kong greet them. Jack and Wang kick some ass. The group now leaves through the hall they came in through earlier. A statue in the hall has its eyes switch, indicating that something nefarious is behind the statue. And there's a hairy orange monster abducts Gracie. The group find Egg and his bus waiting for them outside of the exchange. The guards open fire on the tour bus as they escape.
So when they're in the tunnel still, and there's like a little bit of like, where's Jack? Where's Gracie? Yeah. Where's this? Where's that? And then Gracie and Jack are there together, and he just gets a non-consented kiss. You know, just for the filthy man that a guy is, you know, just kissing a lady without asking.
Yeah.
Or like, I like to feel alive or something like that. Or like, was... I was like, what?
No, he said I got caught in the moment, basically.
Yeah. We cut to Gracie, who is taken to an underground holding cell where Lopan inspects her. He ponders what the meaning of two girls with green eyes is. Back at the Black Dragon, everyone is preparing for war. Wang, Jack, Egg, and the Chang Sing reinforcement head towards their destiny. Gracie meets Miao Yan and Lopan in ghost form. Now that he has the two girls with green eyes, he'll sacrifice Gracie and marry Miao Yan. The war party makes a stop at Egg's place before heading for the exchange. Instead of the front door, they must access the exchange via magical-looking underground passage. Lopan has the three storms display their kung fu in order to help with the ritual. Like,
martial arts! Yes. There you go. Very airbendery, you know, yeah. Like, we'll make these girls float. Yeah. They're swords.
The war party and the underground sewer run into a monstrous cavern dweller. Gracie and Miao Yan decked out in their wedding drip as lightning puts them into a trance. Jack follows Wang down a chute into the Wing Kong storeroom, the emergency provisions that consist of fish on fish on fish. There was so much fish.
Yeah, it probably smelled really bad.
It wasn't real fish.
There was some real fish.
Were there? I don't know.
It was. Do you think they made that much fake fish?
I think so.
I think it probably costs less money just to buy fish than it does to make a bunch of fake fish.
Egg explains how to break the curse to Wang and Jack. The war party begins to search the complex. The wedding ceremony begins as Miao and Gracie descend the escalator. The war party is caught by a floating guardian, spectator.
Yeah.
that is made up of eyes.
Oh, so gross.
I like when he opens his mouth and he's got that eyeball. One eyeball.
It's so vile. That's a pure Carpenter thing right there.
And it's just so 80s, you know? Like, let's have strange little puppet things that are just gross looking.
But before that, apparently, like, that escalator, like James Hong was like, I don't want to go down that. He's like, I'm wearing 1 foot tall lifts.
Yeah.
And he's like, they're like, well, I don't have a stunt double for it. He's like, get this guy. He's my guy that works with me all the time. And they're like, you got to go, man. We got to film today. So he's like, this is my last scene. I'm going to die. And he went on the thing. And you could see the, like, when I watched it, because I'd read that first.
Yeah.
And then I watched his face, and you could see the actual nervousness on his face as he's going down. But he's such a pro. He's like, fuck this, whatever.
Shit.
If I die, I die. Like, I'm going to get on this escalator because you fucking... That's what would make sense, is an escalator underneath the fucking weird Chinese fucking...
Yeah.
Like,
I wouldn't trust that... Well, if I was low-paying anyways, I still wouldn't trust the elevator. The escalator was built underground. I'm not saying...
Yeah, you are.
Was it ever inspected? Was it ever inspected?
Well... Not recently. It's there for one reason, for this wedding, you know?
And escalators are so dangerous as it is. You can, anything, like you're wearing a robe, it gets stuck, and terrible.
If you're wearing long clothing, yes.
So he's wearing those long clothing, and he just like put it over his feet, and he's just like, because he's not allowed to touch it, he has to have his hands up.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh,
man.
I can't do that. No, I have to hold on to, I always hold on to the railings.
I do the 1 foot down, 1 foot up, and kind of lean, and I don't touch anything because those things are disgusting.
That is a lot of information from you.
Yeah,
I hold the hand.
I could write a rap tune about it if I wanted to.
You should, but you have to live with it. You'll have to live with it for about a year.
That's fine.
You got to become an escalator repairman.
Yeah.
I've been in malls a lot. I'm fine. Yeah,
too bad Metro Center's gone.
No, we can go to the one on Scottsdale, and it's right by the food court.
Perfect. Oh yeah.
By the movie theater.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know that's all been moved.
No,
the movie theater's not right there anymore.
Oh my goodness.
The movie theater's at the other end where Goldwater's. Like
Anyways.
Lopan, villain, explains his plan to Egg Shen and the war party. Lopan just cannot get enough of explaining what he wants to do.
He's an 80s villain.
Yeah. Jack shoots the eye monster. The war party find a hidden elevator that goes to Lopan's wedding ceremony. But before they descend, Egg gives everyone a potion that invigorates them all.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then they're in that small, they're all crammed in there in the elevator. Jack's like, I'm feeling all right.
He's like, what you got there, Shen? Yeah. He's like, six demon bag.
Yeah.
That was the thing. And then they do the toast. It's to the six demon bag. And what does he say? Like, the red, white, and blue, the stripes that'll never bleed. All of a sudden, this America shit.
Yes,
that made no sense, dude. I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
It does, because Wang wants to be... Wang's a fucking American. They're all Americans.
He is the American dream, I agree. But it just doesn't make any fucking sense when you're going down.
I know.
Because everything goes out the window.
Yes.
You know what I mean? There's fucking Chinese mysticism and magic, you know?
The fucking Constitution ain't saving this shit.
No. No. Only fucking the Templars can do it. Knights of the Templars.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Freemasons.
The elevator opens as the wedding ceremony continues. The group is found out by the eye monster for the last time. Wang draws his sword and impales the eye monster.
Spectator.
Josh is going to call it a spectator.
Yeah, it's a D&D thing. It's a spectator, for fuck's sake.
Wang and Rain fight. Jack and an armored guard fight. Lopan and Egg have a power beam tug of war contest with armored warriors as the avatar of their beam power.
He's video game. Like, this is right around the time the Nintendo came out, and he was doing the Nintendo fucking like motions with it. It was great. But also when he's like poking his hand and getting the blood, like the wow. giggles he does are so amazing.
It's like I'm living.
I'm living all. It's just fucking like it's just you can't. It's a giddiness that is unapproachable for some people.
The egg and low pan powers just dissipate because they're both strong enough they can't hurt each other. Now Lightning fights Egg and he gets the shock of his life. As he uses a metal fan to reflect the electricity bolt.
Six demon bag.
Yeah. Wang and Rain still sword fight, sometimes in the air, until Wang gets the win. Wang now goes after Lo Pan and Miao. Jack and Gracie are reunited. Egg destroys the idol of Ching Ti. Jack is grabbed from behind by the hairy orange monster as he watches Egg destroy the idol. However, the hairy orange monster is easily thwarted. Like, that was the most underused like thing. I thought it was because the prosthetic was not easily seen out of. So the guy probably just, like, I don't know, tripped, and they're just like, fuck it, whatever, keep going.
Because you're doing a choreography with a huge amount of people, you know.
Sure,
what I mean?
So, yeah
it's kind of, it'd be hard, but
it was the most underused, but I get why. Like, it wasn't meant to be used as,
it didn't even make enemy. Sense though. No, they didn't name it at all. It didn't have really much of a connection. It just kind of roamed around and did random shit.
Sure. I didn't see anything in the credits about what it was called. I didn't stick around for it. Jack and Gracie, now in the elevator, have a kiss. It's a consensual one. And the two interrupt Lo Pan and Miao as Lo Pan is trying to finish the ritual. Jack and Wang, who comes in flipping, take on Thunder as Lo Pan cowers behind Miao. Wang draws Thunder away from their current position. This leaves Jack alone with Lo Pan. Jack throws his knife, but misses Lo Pan. In return, Lo Pan throws it back, but this time, Jack catches it with his right hand, like the bottle from earlier in the movie, and hurls the knife right back at Lo Pan, impaling him in the head.
So I'm going to compare this to, this is the whole Jack Burton. In a weird way, this is his sainthood, because he commits three miracles in this movie, and they're all based on his reflexes. He stops the bottle from hitting himself in the face.
Okay.
Boom.
Okay.
Catches it. There was one in the middle. Shit, I can't even remember now. Anyways, the third one is the fucking the knife return, and he kills the, he's the biggest bumbling oaf in this movie.
Yes.
And he gets the kill on the main bad guy.
Yes.
After he goes, very good knife. And then the throw was terrible.
Sure.
Lopan's throw, it wouldn't even have hit him anywhere. Like, they fucked that up real bad. Because it would have been like maybe an armpit, or like just fell on the ground. But, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
There was something in the middle. I can't remember what it was, though. Like, I think he kills one other guy. But, yeah. But that's his... So it takes three miracles to become a saint. I'm quoting the movie The Saint because I love that movie, which is also a trashy movie from 10 years after this one. Maybe 12, yeah.
Val Kilmer. Yeah, that was a terrible movie.
I love it.
Based on the TV show of the same name.
Yep.
Yeah, it's all about fusion. Cold room fusion.
Yeah. The ground shakes upon Lo Pan's death,
and you could see his stilts he's walking on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you could see the boot extensions. Yeah,
nice. Thunder chases Wang around Lo Pan's office, but Thunder sees Lo Pan's dead body. He begins to breathe heavily, increasing his body size until he explodes. Next, Lightning appears to try and stop them from escaping. Wang, Jack, Miao, and Gracie escape through a hole in the ceiling. Lightning follows, but is stopped when Egg drops a Buddha statue on him through the hole in the ceiling.
The device he uses for them to get up there makes no sense at all.
He'd need a very strong motor to be able to winch people up using that type of mechanism.
It doesn't make any sense.
I know how it would operate.
Yeah, but also the person holding it has to be very strong.
Yes, exactly. Like, very, very strong, because you have to hold up the weight, and there's probably some other mathematics, because they're accelerating, so there's probably a little bit more of their mass.
Yeah.
So, like, they're...
You're getting inertia.
Yes, yeah. It the way that it works isn't feasible in the way that it's applied.
No.
Like, yeah, like somebody be, Egg Shen to be falling through the hole.
4'7" Chinese man that weighs probably 130 pounds, and he's 90 years old.
Yeah, he's not. He can't hold that crossbow thing and haul Jack Burton up. Like there's
and
no
he's
way.
Like, Jack, take this. Yeah, and there's like no, it's like it's no switchover. It's really weird.
Utilizing a tunnel, the group is able to escape to the surface. Jack finds his truck and uses it to flee from the Wing Kong Exchange. Wang and Mao kiss. Now that everyone is safe, a celebration is held at the Black Dragon. Jack talks to Egg before Egg leaves. Margo invites Eddie to her place. Wang pays back Jack the bet plus some.
Triple.
Yep. Jack leaves Gracie wanting more. Jack and Wang say goodbye. As a disgrace to the long hauler culture, Jack is drinking as he's driving his rig. As Jack leaves us with parting words, the camera pans to the right. Dwelling under the fifth wheel hitch is the orange hairy monster. Roll credits.
So it's well, in don't the credits is known as sewer monster.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sewer, okay. Sewer monster. Don't forget about the part when Margo says, "Aren't you going to kiss her?" And he's like,
"Yeah,
no,
nah, yeah, no." I didn't forget. I just,
that was the like that was just like what?
That's what I mean. That Jack leaves thought, Gracie wanting more because yeah, she was like. Oh, yeah.
You still thought he was going to go back and do it, though. And he
no, you know what it was? This was 3 years after. This is 1986, but this was, no, wait, no, it was 1980. 6 years later, this was a Han moment. Trying to make him look like the fuck one of the ultimate badasses. Like, you know, they're like, I love you. I know.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah. That's what it was. It was totally like this, like,
yeah.
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 Just, it was one of those moments of making him a badass. And they, the thing is, like, this is a great character they really never followed up with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there was more in the tank.
It was good stuff. Yeah, he was good in this. He, you know, he was always really good. And I think John Carpenter is the guy who knew that better than anybody.
Yeah.
I do want to point out that Rain was also in The Golden Child, which was the other movie that came out this year. And they were working really hard to get this movie released before that, because John Carpenter was at, they actually asked him to direct that movie, but he was like, what are the odds that two movies that deal with Chinese mysticism are coming out at the same time? I've got to get mine out first. But Rain was also in that movie, and he's also in Gleaming the Cube.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring everything back to Gleaming the Cube.
Okay.
Which was, is that PAX? Which one was Rain?
Oh, Rain was,
he was the one with the long hair, right?
No.
Yeah, Kwong.
Did he have, he's really attractive. Peter Kwong. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very handsome guy.
So one of them was actually
James PAX is the was Lightning.
James.
Yeah.
It's one of the two. It's either him or Thunder, like I saw it, or one of them is actually an instructor for like the Chinese police. Like he's a.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
I don't know which one.
I think it was PAX, I want to say, but I'm not sure.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, fucking still
holds up.
Still holds up, man. Like, yeah, sure, sure. There's writing that obviously would not even be written the way today. We all know that.
Yeah.
This movie still holds up, though. Like, the one-liners are great. It doesn't take itself seriously at any point and just has fun.
Yeah.
And just fucks around. There's no stereotyping. There were no jokes that stereotyped anybody.
If anything,
or
it was actually stereotyping about
America. Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Jack was the butt of the joke.
The dumb America. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like, he's a blowhard. He's this, he's that. Like he's everything, like... Like your bad American is per se, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure,
he's just not orange.
Nope. I still, this movie's good. That's why I decided to buy it for $1 more.
I did.
Like,
you got a bargain, man.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
I don't know if we bought it or not. I don't know if we got deal.
I could leave this on in the background all the time. Like, yeah. It's just one of those movies that like it just doesn't get old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You stop and watch me like, oh, here comes that line. But Jack Burton says, what the hell?
Yeah, no, they needed to work on his one-liners. They were good, but they could have been a lot better.
Yeah, you know? They could have been. I wonder what they were before. Maybe there weren't any.
Yeah.
What would this movie have been like had they kept it set in the West.
It wouldn't have worked.
Western theme. Don't think so.
It wouldn't have worked, no. Although it would have come across as just a Western. Like, you would not have got, like, because...
You could do something with
you could do some mysticism or something like that. And that would kind of give it a kind of, I think it would be kind of cool. But I think it was fine the way it was. It would have been too expensive. It's a little easier to do everything on a regular set than to have to do a period set.
Eggshen sure. Shop, you know what that was? That was the setting for Ghostbusters. That was the firehouse.
Okay, all right. That's why. It looked very familiar. I'm like, maybe I'll just pass it off as another San Francisco lot looking very similar.
Yeah.
I just don't know. Because the thing is, like, you want, like, I think the reason they did it is because they were looking at it as a whole and be like, well, you know, let's. It's weirder if you have this stuff in a current time setting, you know, or closer to, than in the West, because it's more old. It's more, you know, like, I don't even know the word.
Ingrained into the culture? Or the neighborhood?
Well, I mean, because there was little China back then, but it was very, very different.
There are a lot in San Francisco specifically. There were a lot of Chinese people living at the time in the old West.
Not that it would have been a problem now, but it would have been appropriate in the old West. You would also have been dealing a lot more with like railroad workers and stuff like that. Yes, like, you know, like there's the whole dichotomy was different. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was a very different setting.
Yeah,
it would have taken on the setting of the Joe Warrior.
Exactly.
Like, that's the exact setting.
As far as, like, the this gang against that gang, yes.
Even the, like, the turn of the century setting. Like, you know.
I think they did it right by going this direction. I think it made a lot more sense. Because you're mixing modern day with magic.
Yes.
And that's what kind of was the selling point of this. Is that, especially when it's 86, you know, you got to think, was it 40 years ago?
Yeah.
41 years ago this movie came out, or 42 years ago.
This movie?
Yeah. 86.
Okay.
Short.
It's 24.
God damn.
This movie's 42 years old. Exactly. But that's the thing. It's like, during that time, it was bringing all the mysticism into a common setting, you know, that everybody knows. You're like, oh, that's a market over there. You know, it's a common day market. You know, kind of dope if you go to Chinatown. So it just brought the possibility of those things happening in our current setting.
Sure, yeah.
Which I feel like more feasible. Because, you know, it's Westerns were a dime a dozen at that time, I feel like. You know what I mean? And it was in that in-between of it, too, kind of. You know, like in between the Clint Eastwood stuff.
Oh, you know? They were not popular at all right
there. He might have wanted to do that where it's like, oh, let's make this big again. But it's like, I think the way he did it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Well, the other guys had nothing to do with it by the time they had to lobby to get their names even on the credits. So,
sure.
Yeah.
I'm curious what that script would look like though.
I just want to see what it sounded like. Maybe it would have been a little bit darker. Maybe it might not have been so
the story,
upbeat and campy. Yeah.
The one thing was this: is Kurt Russell comes into town and his horse gets stolen. That's exactly what it would have been.
Yeah.
And then whether he knew people or not, he would get delved into this like little China fucking society, basically.
Sure. What you want to give this, Josh?
I mean, this is a 6 out of 6 demon bags for
me.
I'm going six out of five. Yeah.
I love this movie. This breaks the rating system.
When I saw this when I was a kid, it always like stuck with me. Like. The guy blowing, like, it's a lot of John Carpenter stuff. I love John Carpenter. Mm-hmm. Like, the guy blowing up, you know, the weird demons and stuff like that. Like the little things he did to really push the culture and, like, you know, like, the little small things about China or Little China or whatever, or like, whatever it is. You know, like, I don't even know what to call it. But the culture of what it is, the American stuff that kind of came over with it all, so... I always liked that. And fucking Kurt Russell's awesome in it. Dunn was like, he's so cool. Yeah. And no, those guys all got pulled off of one movie called like Year of the Dragon, I believe. Like Hong, Dunn, I think Eggshen was in that too. Like so he just like grabbed like 7 like Chinese people from that movie and was like, hey, come on over. Like lot to lot probably, but it doesn't matter. Like this movie, will always stick in my head as one of my favorites, you know? And if they ever remake something like this and fuck it up, I'm going to burn a studio down.
Okay.
Whoa, shit.
Just kidding. I won't do that. Okay.
That, but I like speculation.
I severely enjoy this movie. It's been one of my favorites since I was a kid, and it still maintains for me. So,
all right.
Six demon bag.
Oh,
when he says that, just I love Egg Shen.
Megs, what you gonna rate this? And you have any parting thoughts, any parting words that you want to say about this movie?
I don't have the same love for this movie that a lot of people have. I didn't really watch it back when I was a kid. It came out, you know, when I was in the summer between 6th and 7th grade. Sure. By the time it came out on cable,
you're a budding tween.
I was just not really, it wasn't really my scene. If this had come out sooner and I watched it all the time on cable, it probably would have been like there for me.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I thought the acting was really fun. I thought the characters were great, and I'll probably give it 4 green eyes.
Oh, 4 green eyes. Fuck. All right.
Girls with green eyes.
Yeah, I love this movie. It's great. It doesn't take itself seriously. It has fun. Like, there's it's low stakes. Like, you get Kurt Russell just spitting one-liners.
Yep.
And he has the coolest knife. and the boots. And the coolest boots. I wanted to just see more boot scenes. I was like, I don't give a shit. Just give me more scenes. I can see those boots so I can see what's going on with them.
Yeah.
I want those motherfucking boots. Like,
I love the boots.
I don't have
those. And the poncho.
Yeah. I did.
When he had the
like,
boots and the poncho together, that was a good look.
Yes,
that reminded me of his son too. I could see Wyatt walking in.
So Wyatt was
like
born
that.
2 days after this movie came out.
Oh, very cool.
Very
cool.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm gonna give it 5 big rigs out of 5 big rigs.
All right.
Yeah. This movie's great. I don't have anything to hate about it. It's fun.
When I started watching it this time, I was like, what is he hauling? I never asked myself that or even was curious.
Did he have a trailer on it?
Yes, so he had a trailer, and it's just live animals.
Yep, it's pigs. Oh. It was pigs.
Yeah.
And he was bringing them to Chinatown.
Oh.
So I don't know if he strictly deals with pork because it's the Pork Chop Express.
I'm
going to go ahead and say because he named it the Pork Chop Express. He's just hauling. Yeah. He's just hauling fucking pork from farm to
just in
farm
California
to Chinatown.
Too. Yeah, because just California.
You probably don't want to switch it around. All of a sudden,
his insurance
like
was from San Diego or Sacramento.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Those were our ratings. We put in our list into the randomizer. Beep boop beep boop
beep boop
boop
beep boop.
And we came up with a new movie genre, and that movie genre is superior remakes. So movies that are pretty much one-to-one. Like, there might be little differences here and there, but like Judge Dredd and Dredd, those are not even, that's not a remake. Those are a reboot close to just a different telling. Like, the stories aren't even the same. I'm drawing a blank on another good one that's a good comparison that's not a remake.
That's not a remake.
Yeah. But that's what
Like we said, Scarface, because the original one was about Al Capone and then the other one. So they're both gangsters, but it's very different stories because
I thought I had some, but the next movie that was chosen was Meg's movie. And what movie is that, Megs?
It's going to be Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which is a remake of Bedtime Story.
Okay.
Yeah, starring the original starred Marlon Brando and David Niven. The remake, as most people know, stars Steve Martin and Michael Caine, who work so well together.
Michael Caine's great. I love Michael Caine. Mm-hmm. And people might be wondering, or maybe they're not, but I'm going to say it anyways. Why the difference in title? That's okay. But if the story is the same, the title doesn't really make a difference.
Yeah. And I think it's also a time. You know, they put a movie out called Bedtime Stories in the 80s, I don't think anybody would. They would probably think it was a children's movie.
Well, or something much different, like
you know, like Red Shoe Diaries. Porns.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Red Shoe Diaries presents bedtime stories.
That's not a children's story. No, it is not.
Oh, that was David Duchovny too. David Duchovny, yes. There we go. Dear Red Shoes.
Brings us.
We
to
should just do a fucking podcast just based on Red Shoe Diaries, man.
Ooh.
Yeah, just fucking. What is it? Erotic. It's erotica. Erotic entertainment.
It's erotica.
Oh yeah,
it's
called porn. I thought you were
not porn.
It's erotica.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Like you'll see nipples and boobs and bare butt.
Yeah.
But you never see the bush.
It's like a tamer version of the old Penthouse letters.
You know, just
letters.
A little.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Just that.
A little bit of that.
Yeah.
Just a whisper
never,
of it.
Never. You get some dick neck, probably.
No dick neck. No dick neck.
Maybe.
Well, we're going to have to do this then. We'll fucking count the number of dick necks we see.
And I didn't make that term up. That is
that's a used term,
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Now our next segment is give me the juice.
Give me the juice.
What you been watching that's new, huh, Josh?
So I watched the animated live action Last Avatar.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. It's better than the movie that came out. It's not as kiddie as the show, the animated Nickelodeon show, but it's a good rendition of it. I'll say that. The one thing is, I think the choreography lacks a little bit. But if you've never watched or don't want to watch the animated stuff, watch this. It's a good version of it. You get a lot of good actors too that are that look the role and look the part, so they did a really good job with that. So it's only 8 episodes. It's on Netflix. Like it's worth watching. I think they already green lighted it for a new one. So it's something to watch if you are interested in that at all. So yeah,
cool. Megs, how about you? What's been in your viewing, reading, listening?
I started finally the new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which I was just behind on, and I'm a big fan of the show, and especially because Richard Lewis just died.
Yeah.
So it was a little sad to watch.
Richard.
Yeah. It was a little sad because he doesn't appear until the third episode, but it is a little bit sad to watch, but.
One of the best Nebbish.
Still fun. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. His Nebbish is so good.
Well, especially when he runs it off of Larry David's. So
it's like Larry's is bad, but his is like just so much more.
They're just when they get into it at each other, it's hilarious. So, yeah, it was fun to watch. And I'll probably watch a few more episodes tonight.
Very cool. Very cool. Dune Part 2. Dune Part 2.
That's why we watched it. I was like, I know he's going to talk about it. So
I did not.
Well, if you haven't, now it is a good theater movie. It is a good theater movie. The visuals are there. The sound is there. The scale fits. It's fun. I would recommend it for people who, you know, are new to it and just seeing the movies, or if you've read the books.
And in my opinion, if you want to watch Javier Bardem steal another movie, this is one of them, because he does. You're like Timothy Chalamet.
The tone is portrayed very well, about some of the themes and motifs of what Dune, in the literary sense, what it had going for it. It was spectacular. I cannot wait for it to be on Blu-ray.
Have you seen the videos of the guy that made like the sandworm and he's riding around in the theater?
No.
So he took one of those hoverboards.
Okay.
And he's on it and he's got like the hooks and he's like riding around. It's like this big sandworm that he's riding around, and it's hilarious. You got to see it.
I want to see that. It reminds me of like the first season of what was that spy show? Was it Zach Levitt?
Oh, Chuck.
Chuck.
Oh,
yep. And they had a sandworm thingy, but it was more like a Chinese dragon thing.
That's awesome.
Yes. Yeah, so that, yeah, Dune Part 2. Fucking, I'm going to go see it again. Brings us to reviews. We do not have any reviews, but I keep getting emails from somebody who says if we put onto their platform that we'll get fucking so many views.
Okay.
I just thought I'd share that. I'm not going to do it. I'm like, all right, buddy. No, because all it's trying to steal this. Because as soon as it goes onto their platform, they're like, yeah, we own it and shit now.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, no. Good luck, buddy. Like... Like, I'm not falling for that.
We're not. We weren't born yesterday.
No. So we don't have anything for you to read, Josh.
Damn it.
Yeah. But if you want, you can go out and review us either on Spotify, Audible, Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram at the Amateur Movie Review Hour, or you can email us at the Amateur Movie Review Hour at gmail.com. Yeah, go watch Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and come back next time and we'll be talking about that. Check you later.
Don't forget to gleam the cube.